and nobody sues you. There are some practicalities involved. Landseer thought it over for a few seconds, then said, I want the tigers back. Virgil nearly bit his tongue off as he was about to blurt, Atta girl! But managed to abort the reaction and said instead, piously, I think we all do. Our ethical positions have to take into consideration the impact our decisions will have on the tigers, with whose care we are entrusted. You're a very capable bullshitter, Landseer said. Thank you. When do you want to do it? She asked. Soon as possible, Virgil said. Lunchtime, 12 noon. Virgil continued on to BCA headquarters in St. Paul, where he spent some time with the crime scene crew, looking at what they'd gotten. The blood spot on the floor turned out to be human blood, and fresh. There wasn't much. It was a superficial layer on the concrete, not soaked in, B. Sawyer told him. It looked like somebody might have cut himself and a drop of blood hit the concrete. I'm thinking it could have happened when they were handling the tigers, all those teeth and claws. Think they'd need treatment? She shrugged. We're only seeing one drop. He might have bled all over a tiger or wrapped the cut with a hanky or something, so there might be a lot of blood that we're not seeing. Or it could be one drop. Not enough information to tell. We've got it in line for DNA processing, but you know what the line's like. Yeah. The DNA processing line was short enough that they'd have evidence for a trial, but long enough that it wouldn't do much for solving the case, even if they eventually got a hit from the DNA database. Why would you think anyone would wrap a cut with a hanky? Well, to stop the bleeding. But why with a hanky? Who do you know carries a hanky? Virgil asked. It's just an expression, Virgil, Sawyer said. You know who wraps wounds with a hanky? Virgil asked. People on TV. Somebody gets cut on TV, they've got a hanky. In real life, no hanky. You need a different expression. Wrapping the wound with toilet paper, or Dunkin' Donuts napkins, something more intelligent than a hanky. Right, I'll put it on top of my lists of things to do, Sawyer said. Get new expression. It's like people getting hit with lead pipes, Virgil continued. Who gets hit with lead pipes? They haven't made them for 100 years. There aren't any lead pipes around, except maybe in water mains, and water mains are way too big to hit anyone with. Copper pipes, steel pipes, iron pipes, plastic pipes. No lead pipes. Nobody gets hit with lead pipes. I'll write that in my book of Virgil Flowers' tips, Sawyer said, exasperated. Now get out of my hair. Sandy, the researcher, saw him in the hallway, said she'd called several van rental places, and there'd been a lot of vans out during the period that covered the thefts. Not all had been returned, but of those that had, nobody noticed any blood, tiger hair, or anything else unusual, and some of the vans had already been re-rented. She was compiling a list of names of the renters. The problem is, if they drove here from California or Washington, they might have rented the vans out there, she told Virgil. Why would they be from California or Washington? Because of where you find the traditional medicine shippers dealing with China. Those tigers could be in Salt Lake by now, if they're on the back of a tractor trailer. Could you get me the names of these shippers? Virgil asked. Davenport called. He had a phone number for Toby Strait, his contact in the animal parts underworld. His girlfriend said he's hiding out from an animal rights activist who shot him last year. I heard something about that. Didn't remember his name, though. The girlfriend didn't have a phone number for him? She says not, though she's probably lying, Davenport said. She also told me that he's moving away from black bear gallbladders and is focusing more on reticulated python skins. She says he can generate more volume with snake skins, with less personnel trouble. Pythons? Where does he get them? Mostly from former dairy farmers who've got heated barns, Davenport said. They feed them, grow them, kill them, and skin them. He deals the hides to Italy. Minnesota dairy farmers are raising snakes? Sounds nasty, Virgil said. It is nasty. Strait's not a nice guy, and he's a little fucked up right now. That animal rights woman shot him through both legs, and he's hobbling around. They let her out on bond, and he thinks she's looking to solve both her problems. If she shoots him through the heart next time, she gets rid of an animal abuser and the primary witness for the first shooting. You think she's really doing that, hunting him down? Wouldn't be surprised, Davenport said. Her name's Maxine Knowles, and she lives somewhere up by Monticello. You better find him quick. You know, before she does. Sandy came back. Got a name for you. Biggest shipper out of the U.S. Name is Ho, and he works out of Seattle. Virgil found an empty conference room that was quiet and private, and called Ho. The call was answered by a woman with a soft, high-pitched voice that sounded like a child's. She had a musical Asian accent.
Can I tell Mr. Ho who's calling?
Virgil identified himself, and she said,
One moment, please. I will see if Mr. Ho is in his office.
Ho was in his office, all right, Virgil thought, as he sat listening to an orchestra version of the Beatles' Eleanor Rigby, but was trying to concoct a reasonable lie about being somewhere else, out of touch. To Virgil's mild surprise, Ho came up. His voice carried no trace of any accent, except maybe UCLA computer science. This is Ho. We know nothing about it. I wouldn't touch a tiger with a 10-foot pole, or even a 10-foot Ukrainian. Who would? I don't know. What kind of numbnuts would kidnap a couple of endangered list tigers? You gotta know that the cops will be hunting you down like you were a rabid skunk. I'd suggest you go look for lunatics and don't call Ho. Mr. Ho, what's your first name?
Dick.
Dick, really? Okay, I understand that tiger parts are used in traditional Chinese medicine.
That's correct, but they don't get the tiger parts from me, or from anywhere in the States. Most of what's sold in the States as tiger product comes from something else. God only knows what. Maybe alley cats. Anyway, it's all fake. If the feds catch you shipping tiger parts into the States, you're looking at 3 to 5 in Victorville. If you were shipping them out, and they were stolen from a zoo, you'd probably get the needle.
Which would maybe be one reason to kidnap a tiger in the States and keep it here?
Might be a reason, but it's not a sane one. It's crazy, Ho said.
But that's what happened here. Since you deal in traditional medicine, are there people in Minnesota that would be knowledgeable in the area of traditional medicine? That you know and work with? That I could talk to?
Yes.
Long pause. You didn't hear this from me. Okay. Let me get my list up. Virgil heard the rattle of a keyboard, then Ho came back. Talk to 4 people. Dr. Winston Peck, M.D. in St. Paul. India healer Sandra S.A. Gupti Mack in Minneapolis. Carolyn C. Monty McCall, Ph.D., in Apple Valley, and Toby Strait of Owatonna. I can get you those addresses and phone numbers.
A couple people have mentioned Toby Strait, Virgil said.
You think?
No, not Toby himself. Don't tell anyone I told you this, but Toby looks at animals the way most people would look at a turnip or a cabbage. Killing doesn't bother him. But he's not a reckless businessman. If somebody offered him a couple of tigers, he'd do the calculation, and then he'd step back. He wouldn't have any moral problem with killing a couple of rare tigers, but he'd see the practical problems. He'd know that if he got caught, he'd get no mercy from anyone.
All right. Give me those addresses and phone numbers if you could.
Ho produced them, and Virgil said, Thank you, as he wrote them down. Then Ho asked,
Say, where'd you get my name?
Internet, Virgil said.
Of course.
Why'd I even ask?
The noon meeting at the zoo was crowded with employees, many of them in blue employee uniform shirts, with a necktie here and there. A rumbling conversation continued even after Landseer rapped on a microphone with a steel ballpoint
and finally a guy stood up and shouted, "Everybody shut up!"
Lancer said, "Thank you, Ed," to the man, who sat down again as the talk died. And Lancer said simply, "I called this meeting so that the state agent can talk to you about the theft of the Tigers. His name is Virgil Flowers, and he has an exceptional record of solving major crimes. So we have high hopes he'll get our Tigers back. Agent Flowers."
Virgil got up and gave his talk, and said in part, "I'm sure you've all heard some of the details of the way the Tigers were taken out of here, probably on a dolly of some sort, maybe like the flat ones that furniture movers use. You've probably heard that the catnappers cut holes in the fence to get into the holding areas, or whatever you call them. You may not have heard that they didn't cut through the lock on the gate. The lock is a good one, and we don't believe it was picked. The thieves had a key, and the key had to come from inside the zoo. They either stole it, or somebody gave the key to the thieves. We're hoping somebody here in the room will know of a way the key could have been stolen. Might have seen some unauthorized person in the gear closet where the keys are kept, or might have heard of some unauthorized use of the keys by somebody here in the zoo. We're not asking you to rat out a friend. We're asking you to help us trace the key to whoever has the Tigers. We need to do this quickly. Some people think the Tigers may have been stolen for use in traditional Chinese medicine, which would mean killing them." A man asked, "Why do you think it's Chinese medicine? Seems to me more likely that it might be anti-zoo activists." Virgil said, "We're looking at those people, but there are not many of them. And whatever they say in their literature, they don't have a record of doing things like this. They're more likely to chain themselves to the entry gate. We think somebody did this purely for the payday. The only way there'll be a big payday is if the animals are processed for medicine." There were a few more questions and some grumbling, and Virgil finished by asking for tips at the BCA website. There's a click-on link at the top of the page that says, "Select a popular function." If you click on that, you'll find a link called "Provide a Tip." You can do it anonymously. Mention my name or the Tigers. At this point, we'd appreciate any help we can get. Lancer took the microphone back and said, "We need to get this done in a hurry, people. If you know anything at all, or even suspect something, please, please call Agent Flowers or leave a tip." When everybody had shuffled out of the meeting room, Lancer asked, "What do you think?" "Hard to tell. Not a lot of enthusiasm. But all I need is one guy who saw something," Virgil said.
8. Virgil didn't expect any immediate response to the tip line, so he got out the list of contacts that he'd gotten from Ho in Seattle. One of them, Carolyn C. Monty McCall, Ph.D., lived nearby, and he decided to go with her first. He wasn't very familiar with Apple Valley, other than having slid off a highway into a ditch the winter before on his way to St. Paul after a snowstorm. The town turned out to be a pleasant and fairly standard middle-class suburb, quiet streets lined with trees, basketball nets beside the driveways, three-car garages everywhere. Monty McCall lived on Fossil Lane in an area where all the street names began with F, which Virgil found annoying for reasons he couldn't quite nail down. His nav system took him off 145th Street, perfectly good name for a street, in his opinion, onto Flora Way, then onto Freeport Trail, past Fridley Way, onto Flagstone Trail, down Footbridge Way, and then onto Fossil Lane. It all seemed unnecessary, and maybe stupidly precious. Monty McCall had a two-story cocoa-colored house with yellow trim and a stand of paper birch trees in the small front yard. A discreet sign under a front window said, "Monty McCall, Ph.D., hinting that she might take clients, patients, at the house. She was home. Virgil rang the doorbell, heard a thump, and a moment later, Monty McCall, wearing a quilted and belted hip-length housecoat and turquoise-colored capri pants, came to the door and peered out at him. He held up his ID, and she opened the interior door, and through the screen said, "Yes?" Virgil identified himself, told her that he was looking for the stolen tigers. "I'm told you have some expertise in traditional Chinese medicine, and we're looking for contacts in that, community," Virgil said. "Well, I didn't take them," she said. She was a woman of average height, perhaps 40, with heavy dark hair and a single thick eyebrow that extended across both eyes. "I didn't think you did," Virgil said. "I have a list of prominent experts on traditional Chinese medicine, and your name was on that list. We have some questions about that, community, and we're looking for help." "I don't know what I can tell you," she said, "but I'll answer questions. Come in." Inside, she pointed Virgil at a couch and asked, "You want a glass of white wine?" "I can't, thank you," Virgil said. "I'm on duty." "Well, I haven't had lunch, so I'm going to have one, if you don't mind," Monty McCall said. "That's fine," Virgil said. She went away to the kitchen, and Virgil took a furtive look around. Not much to see, a couple of commercial semi-abstract landscape paintings, one above the couch and the other on the wall near the entry, plus the couch he was sitting on, an easy chair, a coffee table, and wall-to-wall carpeting in pale green. The room was opaque, without real personality, and maybe, Virgil thought, by design, if she dealt with clients in her home. Monty McCall came back with a frosted beer mug and a bottle of white wine. "What can I do for you?" she asked, as she unscrewed the top on the bottle. "All I got was your name. What kind of work do you actually do?" Virgil asked. "I'm a psychotherapist with a subspecialty in traditional medicines," she said. "These are not prescription medicines, but rather nutritive distillations, supportive potions that help clear the body of unnatural poisons, not drugs." "Are any of them derived from animals?" "Some, but nothing that would ever come from tigers or rhinoceros horns or anything like that." She poured the beer mug full of wine. "Most of the animal-based tonics come from standard meat processing plants, as I understand it. Some kinds come from suppliers of game meats and fur processors. The few that I use, I buy pre-made, standard, brand-name things. I don't actually get involved in any animal processing myself." She took a long swallow of wine as though she were drinking a Pepsi. "All right, what I really need to know is whether you suspect any suppliers or manufacturers of the animal products of selling illicit products like tiger or rhinoceros parts." "No, although I've never given it much thought." "They're all pretty commercial. There's not a big demand for the products, so you have a few small retail suppliers nationally, most of them selling through the internet. I know, anecdotally, that there's a demand for some tiger products, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was an underground internet thingy that sold some of it. I do know there is a man here in Minnesota who collects bear gallbladders and ships them to China," she said. Toby's straight, Virgil thought. "I've heard about him, and I've got him on my list to talk to," Virgil said. "Do you know either a Dr. Winston Peck, M.D. in St. Paul, or India healer Sandra S.A. Gupti Mack in Minneapolis?" The corners of Monty McCall's mouth turned down, and she said, "Where did you come up with those names? They can't be on your expert lists. They must be suspects." Virgil leaned back. "I'd prefer not to say, but if you have any information?" She'd already drunk half the mug of wine and now took another gulp and did a fake shiver as she swallowed. "Winston Peck is a creep. Believe me, I know. He did a seminar on traditional medicines, 5 years ago, where we met. I was talking to him afterward, and one thing led to another, you know, and he asked me out. We went out a couple times. To cut it short, he's a sex freak. I would have nothing to do with him." "Violent?" Virgil asked. "Not dangerously. He didn't try to drug me or anything. He didn't try to rape me.
He's simply creepy.
Do you want to define creepy, or do you want to pass? Virgil asked.
I'll give you the outline. Winston is a narcissist. He wants women to service him. Not, you know, interactive sex. He wants what he wants. When he gets what he wants, his interest in sex goes away. If you understand what I'm saying.
Virgil rubbed the side of his nose, then said,
Okay, what about the tigers? Could he do that?
She thought for a moment, then said, Possibly. He lives high, and there's a rumor that he can't practice medicine anymore. He might need the money. I looked up his degree, and it's legit, but the rumor is he did something really bad and can't practice.
Virgil nodded. That was interesting.
No details?
No. I looked him up a lot on the internet, but couldn't find anything, she said.
What about Sandra Gupti Mack?
Yeah, Sandy Mack graduated from high school down in Farmington and sold real estate for years, and then she went off to India for about 15 minutes one year and came back as a guru with a dot on her forehead and a hyphenated name that she hopes sounds Indian, Monty McCall said. Not that there's anything wrong with hyphenated names, obviously, if they're legitimate. She does what she calls psychotherapy and peddles her homemade pills all over the country. She even wrote a book about it, The Buddha's Apothecary. Now, I'll tell you what, it would not surprise me at all if she used animal-based medications. She brags about being a traditionalist compounding pharmacy, so she'd need the raw product.
But you don't think she's totally legitimate? Virgil asked.
She finished the wine with a gulp, pulled a hand across her lips, and said, That bitch wouldn't know an ethic if one bit her on her butt. The Buddha's apothecary. Are you kidding me? It's like the Buddha was a drugstore clerk in his spare time, a soda jerk or something. She's gotten rich with her pills. I tell you something else that didn't occur to me until right now. If she had some real honest-to-God tiger, she could roll her tiger pills out there for $1 million, maybe more. How many pills could you get out of a tiger? 100,000 or more?
I have no idea. Bet she does.
Monty McCall was refilling her beer mug with wine when Virgil left. Her information had been fairly tepid, with a few interesting raisins, that whole thing about Peck having a questionable history, and Virgil got in his truck thinking about female alcoholics and how they were less visible than men, except when they got behind a steering wheel. Usually, though, they'd sit home and hammer the white wine instead of going out to a bar and drinking and falling down in public. He liked an after-work beer himself, had no problem with people who liked to take a drink. Sometimes, though, you could see what was coming. Monty McCall was killing herself. Sandra Gupti Mack was up next. She lived in the uptown area of Minneapolis, in a gray two-story house that probably dated to the pre-war years. Two bicycles were chained to the white-painted railings on a tiny front porch, and a bronze statue of the seated Buddha gazed at passersby from a wall niche that had once been a window. The Buddha was positioned on a rug, the rug providing a platform for the bolts that held the statue in its niche. Evidence, Virgil thought, of the existence of Buddha statue thieves. Above the Buddha was a sign much like Monty McCall's. Dr. Sandra Gupti Mack, psychotherapy and traditional medicine. Beside him was a yellowing copy of the Buddha's apothecary. Gupti Mack was home too. A tall, heavy, dark-haired, dark-eyed woman who trembled like an aspen when she opened the door, Gupti Mack was dressed all in white, a blouse that looked like a doctor's hospital jacket with matching white slacks with bell-bottoms. She was barefoot. She had a black dot in the middle of her forehead, not quite centered between her eyebrows. When Virgil introduced himself, she said, "I have a client at the moment. I'll be with her for another 20 minutes, and I have another client a half hour after that. I'll walk up to the corner store and get a Coke and come sit on your porch and wait," Virgil said. "Come get me when your client leaves. I won't need a half hour." She nodded, reluctantly, and closed the door. He walked up the street, got a Coke, came back and sat on the porch, and watched the people go by. Mostly women, getting into their lives. Uptown was where you went after you graduated from the university and got a job in marketing at Pillsbury or General Mills, but still had that butterfly tattoo on your shoulder blade, hip, or ankle. As he was sitting there, an ancient man hobbled by, assisted by a cane. He looked like he'd been dressed by somebody else, in a floppy-brimmed boonie hat, a t-shirt that said Chairman of the Board over a black-and-white photo of Frank Sinatra, and faded madras shorts. He was wearing black over-the-calf socks and sandals. His legs looked like they came off a cafe table. He stopped on the sidewalk and eyed Virgil.
What are you looking at?
Virgil said. Mostly the girls going by.
Oh, yeah. I used to do that,
the old man said, after a moment's thought.
I just can't remember why.
He went on his way. A half hour after Gupti Mack said she'd be 20 minutes, a red-eyed woman walked out, dabbing at her eye sockets with a Kleenex. As Virgil stood up, she said, I hope you're not here to harass Dr. Gupti. No, I'm not, Virgil said. You better not be. My husband's a lawyer, and he'd be on you like a permanent wave. Virgil realized he had no place to go with the conversation. He didn't even know what a permanent wave was, so he fished a business card out of his pocket and handed it to her. If your husband thinks he needs to talk to me, my number is on the card. I'm sure he'll do that, she said. She scuttled off down the sidewalk to a blue Prius and stared at him through the windshield with the electric ferocity only a Prius owner could summon as he knocked on Gupti Mack's door. Gupti Mack let him in and said, My last session ran long. I'm afraid I couldn't help it. I have only 15 minutes or so until my next one. The house smelled like incense, which was no surprise. The only surprise was that it smelled so good. I'm the BCA agent assigned to recover the tigers stolen from the zoo, Virgil began. I'm sure you've heard about it, so I've been contacting people with knowledge of the traditional medicine community, seeing if they could point me in any particular direction. Gupti Mack asked the usual questions about where he'd gotten her name and why he'd come to her in particular, and Virgil replied with the usual evasions. And finally she said, I have no idea who might have taken the tigers. I was shocked when I heard. Shocked.
When I saw in the paper this morning that you police believe somebody in the traditional medicine community was involved, well, I dissolved in disbelief. Absolutely dissolved.
Do you use any tiger products in your compounding? Virgil asked. Absolutely not. Never. Is that why you're here? Because you think I took these tigers to make medications out of them? That's absurd. Should I have a lawyer here?
If you're not involved in the theft, of course not, Virgil said. We're trying to get the tigers back alive, and if somebody snatched them to make them into pills, we might already be too late.
Then if you don't suspect me, what exactly do you want?
You know lots of people in this community. If people took the tigers to make them into medicines, they'd have to have a way to market them, Virgil said.
Two tigers. I'll tell you, Officer Flowers, I have no idea who'd be able to handle that much weight in traditional medication. My total sales, if you were to weigh them, would probably come out to 10 pounds of medications a year. The newspaper this morning said that the tigers weigh over 1,000 pounds together. I would think that the only way they could be sold is if somebody had a way to get them to China.
Alive?
Oh, probably not. They would probably process them in some out-of-the-way laboratory and ship the medications, she said. The U.S. doesn't care so much about what goes out of here, and the Chinese are quite flexible about what they allow in.
Any other possibilities that you can think of?
There is one man here in Minnesota. She was talking about the guy who bought and sold bear gallbladders, as had Monty McCall. But she couldn't come up with anyone else except an herbal wholesaler in Chicago and a ginseng dealer in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Virgil had a hard time looking into her eyes. The black dot on her forehead was the tiniest bit off-center, and he found himself watching it, wishing it an eighth inch to the left. He asked about Monty McCall. "That fraud," Gupti Mack sneered. "She calls herself a specialist in traditional Chinese and South Asian medicine, but I don't think she's ever set foot outside the United States, much less India or China. And she has that phony doctorate from some Jesus jumping up and down diploma mill in Mississippi or Alabama. Yet she dares to compete with me, after I've put myself through a rigorous training program in both Mumbai and Beijing, with the highest authorities." Virgil interrupted. "Is there any real use for tigers in medicines?" That brought her up short, and after a moment she said, "Yes, just as there is a real use for heroin in Western medicines.
Those nostrums are not used only because of the ethical issues involved.
But if somebody knew they were getting real tiger pills, there'd be a market?" She didn't want to say it, but did.
"I suppose so."
"What about Dr. Winston Peck?" Virgil asked. "Do you know anything about him?" "Winston? Well, he has an MD in Western medicine, but no longer practices. He's an authority in traditional medicines of all kinds, Asian, Indian, Native American, and Inuit, among others. He's written 2 books comparing traditional and contemporary Western medications, tracing the way traditional societies have often used analogs of modern medicines well before Westerners ever discovered the modern equivalents. The Sioux, for example, used red willow bark as an analgesic, and it turns out that willow bark contains salicylic acid, which we know as aspirin." She went on for a while, until Virgil asked, "Have you, I don't know quite how to put this, have you heard that Dr. Peck has been involved in unusual behavior with women?" She blushed, but shook her head, and Virgil thought, "So it's true." The only question was, how unusual? "I have never heard anything like that," she said. "He's a scholar and a medical doctor, with a good reputation in the traditionalist community." Out in his truck, Virgil dug out his iPad and Googled Peck. He found the usual mishmash of LinkedIn, Facebook, and medical conference listings, often confusing Peck 6 with Peck 5 and Peck 4, the latter two alive only by reputation. The accumulation of internet stuff was as boring as anything Virgil had ever read. With no luck on the internet, Virgil called Peck but got an answering machine. He left a message and drove back to BCA headquarters, where he found Sandy, the BCA researcher, in her shoebox office. "How do I find out about a guy who doesn't have a criminal record, as far as I know, and has the most boring internet personality ever?" "Boring internet personality, huh? Gotta be a crook, laying low. Give me what you got, and I'll go out on the net and look around." While Sandy did her search, Virgil checked with John Duncan, who asked hopefully, "Anything good?"
"I'm not stirring up anything I can get hold of," Virgil said.
He told Duncan about his talk at the zoo and his conversations with Monty McCall and Gupti Mack. When he finished, Duncan, who was twiddling a yellow pencil, said, "Geez, not much there." "Not yet. These are unusual people, though. I think we're in the right area," Virgil said. "All right, well, pray for rain. Anything I can do, let me know." Duncan, having been a field cop, knew well enough that even on important cases, sometimes nothing happened when you needed it to. Virgil checked the tip line, found nothing intended for him, and called Frankie to ask about Sparkle. "Have you seen her this afternoon?" "Yeah, she's home. She said everybody at Castro was nice enough, but she says they hated her being there." "That's okay, as long as they don't do anything about it. Sparkle says she thought a guy in a red pickup truck followed her for a while, but she lost him in Mankato. She says, kind of freaked me out, but when I really pushed her on it, she wasn't sure she was being followed at all. I think she expected to be, and when she saw two trucks that looked more or less alike, she got paranoid. She checked her rear-view mirror all the way out here and never saw the truck after she left Mankato. Huh. Well, as long as she's okay, Virgil said. You coming home tonight? Might as well. Nothing happening here, Virgil said. That's not good. I've still got a guy to talk to. Sandy was tracking Peck through the wilds of the internet. So when Virgil went back to talk to her, he found her pounding on her keyboard. She glanced up at him, held up a hand that meant stop or go away, and he said, I'll get a ding-dong. You finding anything? Yes, give me 5 minutes. Virgil got a ding-dong from the vending machine and gave her 10 minutes. He and Sandy had once had a sharply abbreviated romance, and she continued to be testy with him. When the 10 minutes were up, he went back to her office where she was peering at a pale green document on screen. She said, Interesting. What's interesting? Dr. Peck lost his license to practice medicine in Indiana when a medical board found that he'd engaged in unethical behavior with some female patients. I had to go around some circles to find it, but it turned out he'd give women with sprains or muscle pulls or other minor injuries a shot of nitrous oxide to help relax them while he was putting on a splint or a wrap or manipulating a limb. They'd wake up feeling all funny. Uh-oh. Yeah. He was lucky he wasn't charged with rape, but nobody was exactly sure they'd been penetrated. One woman thought she might have been photographed for later use. Anyway, the fact that he was disciplined would show up on any background check. And once the details were known, there's no way he'd ever get licensed, not here in the States. But he still calls himself a doctor. Well, not exactly. He calls himself Winston Peck the Sixth, M.D. And he does have an M.D., Sandy said. Huh. Thank you. Not done, she said. More? He filed for bankruptcy 2 years ago. $230,000 in debt, $12,000 in assets, not counting his house and two vehicles. He had to sell a car. He kept a truck, a Tahoe. What business? He had an idea like emojis, Sandy said. He called them the Nip family. They were digital nipple images that you could customize to look like your own nipples, and they could carry messages back and forth. You'd send somebody a nipple on your iPhone, and it'd talk to their nipples, and so on. Nipples. Yeah. You get the nipples for free, but then you go to the Nip website and customize them for $1, so they'd look like your own. You know, with nipple rings or whatever, she said. He copyrighted the idea, but he doesn't know how to code, apparently, and he hired a couple of coders who drove him right into the ground with their salaries. And when nobody bought a nipple, he was screwed. You're pulling my wiener, Virgil said, without thinking. No, I tried that, and it didn't really pay off for me, she said. Hey, okay, but what I'm telling you is the truth. He tried to create a Nip family thing, hoping it'd go viral, and it went more like bacterial, like flesh-eating bacteria. They ate all his money. Which would give him a reason to grab the cats. Virgil and Sandy looked at each other for a few seconds, Sandy waiting, until Virgil finally said, He's the most interesting guy I've run into so far, the only one who'd seem to have the energy to pull this off. Which doesn't necessarily mean he did it. There are probably another 500,000 people in the cities with his energy level, Sandy said. Yeah, but he's been outside the law with these women. He's in financial trouble. He deals in traditional medicine. He's got the energy. Certainly worth a closer look, she said. 9. Peck still wasn't answering his phone, so Virgil went to his address, which turned out to be a 60-year-old white-shingled house with a tuck-under garage in a quiet neighborhood not far from the Cathedral of St. Paul. Virgil banged on the door for a while and got no response. Looked through the garage windows and found enough light to see that the garage was empty. Back in his truck, he tried calling Peck again, and again got no answer. Stuck for the moment, he looked up the number Dick Ho had given him for Toby Strait, called it, and got nothing. No phone with that number, at least not on any network, anywhere. Virgil next tried the number Lucas had given him and connected with Strait's girlfriend, whose name was Inez.
I already talked to that other cop about this, that Lucas was his name. Toby's hiding, Inez said. That Knowles bitch is hunting him down, and the law knows it, and they don't do a friggin' thing about it. Toby's afraid to turn on his phone because there are ways of tracking it. If somebody spoofs a number and he answers it, Knowles can figure out exactly where he's at.
You really think she's still hunting for him? She's lucky to be walking around free, Virgil said.
I know she's still hunting him. She's told people that. You want to know something? If anybody has any idea of where Toby is, it's probably Knowles.
Well, that's an idea, Virgil thought, and it was good from two angles. Knowles might know where Strait was hiding, and she was among the most radical of animal rights activists in the state. A lot of radical animal rights people didn't care for zoos, so there was at least a slender possibility that Knowles might know about somebody who had taken the animals as a publicity stunt, if that's what had happened. Lucas had said she lived near Monticello, on the northwest edge of the Twin Cities metro area. He could probably jump the rush hour traffic and make it up there in an hour or so. He called the BCA duty officer, asked him to find out where Maxine Knowles had been arrested, and to get the address she'd left with whatever police agency had arrested her, and to check her driver's license and see if that matched with her bail papers. He made it out of town ahead of the rush and was on I-94 driving north when he took the call back from the duty officer who told him that Knowles lived 8 miles out of Monticello. He'd looked at a Google Earth picture of the address and told Virgil, "It looks like a house with a half dozen trailers scattered around. It's out in the sticks. I'll tell you, Virgia, I'd call up Sherburne County and get a couple deputies to go out there with you." Virgil did that. He explained to the sheriff what the problem was, and the sheriff agreed to send a couple of deputies along. They'd meet in a Walgreens parking lot in Monticello and then cross the Mississippi to Knowles' place. Virgil found the two Sherburne County deputies, who were named Buck and James, chatting with a couple of Wright County deputies at the Walgreens. Virgil shook hands with everybody, then ran into the Walgreens and bought a couple packs of cheese crackers and a Coke. The Wright County deputy said, "Keep your asses down," and Virgil, Buck, and James rolled in a 3-car caravan north across the Mississippi. North of the river, they threaded their way through a skein of back roads that ended at a shabby farmstead, with that semicircle of trailers the duty officer had told him about. Behind the trailers, they could see a maze of 8-foot chain-link fences, which appeared to be much newer and in much better shape than the trailers. 2 gray Subaru station wagons, one with a flat front tire, were parked in front of the cages. They crossed a culvert into the farmyard, and within a minute or so, people began wandering out of the trailers. Virgil, out of his truck, was joined by Buck and James, and Buck whispered uneasily, "Jesus, it's a zombie outbreak." 12 people came out of the trailers, most of them dressed in ragged farm-style clothing, denim overalls and long-sleeved shirts and gum boots, both men and women, and they were old, with long, badly cut hair, gone gray, and all but one or two were noticeably thin. The combination of age, hair, and spindly bodies did give them the look of zombies, Virgil thought, along with the shuffling gait that one or two of them had. A tall, sunken-cheeked man asked,
"What can we do for y'all?"
"I need to talk to Maxine Knowles," Virgil said.
"Can I ask what for?" "She's legally bailed out,"
the man said. "I'm not here about her legal problems," Virgil said. "I actually need to talk to her about her area of expertise. I'm the cop looking for the stolen zoo tigers." That set off a rash of commentary among the crowd, and the tall man shook his head and said,
"Well, that's a disaster. I can tell you we don't have them, and I don't know who would."
"I believe you, but I still need to talk to Maxine," Virgil said. The tall man looked at them for a few seconds, then pulled a cell phone from his pocket and poked in a number. After a few more seconds, he said, "Maxine, there are some police officers out in the yard looking for you. It's about the Tigers." He listened briefly, then hung up, and said to Virgil, "She'll be right out." Maxine Knowles came through the back door of the house, nodded to the group facing Virgil and the deputies, and said to Virgil, "I don't know about the Tigers. I hope you find them before they're killed." She was a tall, stocky, red-haired woman wearing an olive-knit blouse, black jeans, and hiking boots, who added, "I have no idea who'd take them." Virgil said, "Is there somewhere you and I can go to talk?" She pushed out a lip, considering, and said, "I guess so. We could talk in the kitchen." To the group, she said, "I think we're okay here, everybody. Let's get ready to feed." The group began to break up, some people going to their trailers, others walking out toward a couple of sheds set off to one side of the chain-link fences. "What's the chain-link for?" Virgil asked as he followed Knowles through the house's mudroom and into a funky-smelling kitchen, redolent of old potatoes and overripe tomatoes. "Our animals," Knowles said. "We have 14 horses, 4 cows, 6 pigs, 1 broken-winged crow, all rescued. We got a bunch of cats and dogs also rescued that mostly run around loose, unless they've been too abused and we have to sequester them. No tigers." Virgil explained his mission and his thinking. "You're pretty well hooked into the animal rights people. Do you have any ideas for me? Who might have been radical enough to grab the tigers?" She started shaking her head before he got through explaining. "I really don't, and I think you're barking up the wrong tree. You want some nutcakes who are processing them for Asian medicines." "That's what we're all afraid of," Virgil said. "There's a man named Toby Strait. That's the other reason I'm here. He's apparently in hiding ever since you made bail. That son of a bitch." Her eyes grew wider and her face turned red. "You know what he does for a living?" "I think so. If he's allowed to keep doing that, he'll kill off every bear in the state and in Wisconsin and the Dakotas too, for their gallbladders. So some Chinese assholes can make a medicine that doesn't even work. People get all weepy about rhinoceroses, and they should. But who's crying for the black bear? That's what I want to know. Who's crying for the black bear?" "Well, if you ask me for one likely man to steal the tigers..." She paused, settled a bit, and then said, "I'm not going to talk to a police officer about my case." "I don't need that," Virgil said. "What I need is any idea you might have about where Strait might be hiding." "I don't know," she said. "Have you looked?" She shook her head. "I'm not talking to you." "Do you have any ideas? Anything. We're pretty desperate here." She got up and got a glass of water and leaned against the kitchen sink, considering, then said, "He won't be processing bear gallbladders. Not at this time of year. I'd have to guess that he's out at one of his snake barns. Even if he isn't, I know they're processing the skins now, so his snake barn people must be able to get in touch with him." "You haven't been sneaking around to his snake barns, checking up on him?" "I'm not. No, I haven't. And you know why? If I did, I believe I'd get shot. He'd be willing to do that, to get me off his back. And I have to believe that the law would take his side if I was found creeping around him. He'd shoot me and get away with it." "Do you know where one of his snake barns is at?" Virgil asked. She nodded. "Yes. Yes, I do." "But you haven't been sneaking around?" "Of course not." She got a map up on her laptop and pointed out the snake barn. From a satellite view, it looked like a nicely kept place. Nothing at all remarkable. Another pretty Minnesota dairy farm. Best of all, it was straight south from Monticello and a little west, two-thirds of the way back to Virgil's home in Mankato. Virgil thanked her, got up to go, and asked, "What's the story on all the old folks?" "Volunteers," she said. "Help me with the animals. You know, they sort of moved in on me. mostly old people living on Social Security who care about things. They figured if we got some old trailers, didn't even have to pay for them, they're rescue trailers like the rescue animals, and came out here as a group, they could pool their money, live better, have friends around as they get old and start dying off. It works for us. Huh.
I hope that none of you really has anything to do with the tigers, Virgil said.
We don't. I'm not too happy about the whole concept of zoos as a philosophical matter, but for some animals, like Amur tigers, zoos are about the only thing standing between them and extinction. For that, we need the zoos.
Outside, Virgil found Buck and James watching through the chain-link fence as the old people fed the horses. Most of the horses looked solid enough, but two were radically thin.
We got those a week ago. Don't yet know if they're going to make it. You can't just stuff them full of hay all at once, Noel said. What I want to know is, how in the hell can you starve a horse to death in Minnesota in the summer? All you have to do is let them out in a ditch, and they'll feed themselves.
I don't know, Virgil said. I don't understand it either. From Monticello to the Snake Barn, located south of the town of Gaylord, was 90 minutes or so, the blacktop road shimmering with heat mirages. Virgil ate the cheese crackers before he made it back to Monticello, and on his way south, stopped at a McDonald's in Norwood, Young America, for a quarter pounder with cheese, small fries, and a strawberry shake. He thought about Knowles as he ate, and why God might create somebody like her. She'd seemed sane enough, not somebody who was hunting down another human being so she could shoot him to death, but she'd been caught more or less red-handed doing exactly that. People, he thought, were never one thing. Knowles was an intelligent, thoughtful lover of animals and a potential killer. Virgil could feel his heart clogging up with grease as he finished the sandwich, but continued on to Gaylord and out the far side of the town to the farm of Jan Arl, Jan being pronounced like yawn. Arl's wife came to the side door of the suburban ranch-style farmhouse and said Jan was working in the barn. She called him on her cell phone, and a moment later he walked out of the barn and across the yard to the house.
I don't really know where Toby is, but I could probably get a message to him, Arl said.
He was a fat, pink-faced man with an accent that sounded German, but not quite German. Maybe like an American-born kid who grew up speaking German around the house. What I'd have to do is call around the other barns, and somebody probably has a working number.
I need to talk to him today, Virgil said.
I can start calling right now, Arl said.
I'd appreciate it.
Arl went inside the house to start calling. He said he needed to sit down, and Mrs. Arl stood in the yard with Virgil and said,
Real nice day, isn't it? A little too hot, though.
Virgil looked up at the blue sky and puffy white fair-weather clouds and said,
Yep, sure is.
Looks to go on like this, for a while anyway.
Not that we couldn't use some rain, she said.
Most always could use some rain, Virgil said, as long as it's not too much.
Sure got it last year in July, she said, way too much. I think it was heaviest on the 6th.
I remember that, Virgil said. We got something like 3 inches in Mankato.
5 inches out here, on our rain gauge, she said.
Virgil said, Whoa, that must have been something.
Sounded like we had a drummer up on the roof, she said.
They both turned to look at the roof. And so on. Arl came out after 10 minutes and said,
Well, I spread the word. I expect you'll be hearing from him.
You're welcome to stay for dinner if you like.
Had a McDonald's up in Young America, thanks anyway, Virgil said. I kinda like to get home before dark.
Mr. Flowers lives in Mankato, Mrs. Arl said, as they walked over to Virgil's truck.
That must be real nice, Arl said. Nice town. We've talked about retiring there.
Probably not for a while yet, though, Mrs. Arl said.
Virgil waved and got the fuck out of there before his ears fell off.
He was 3 miles out of the Arles gate when Strait called.
This is Toby. Who are you again?
Virgil Flowers. I got your name from Lucas Davenport.
He quit,
Strait said.
Yeah, but he's still got his database, Virgil said.
All right. I'm going to call Davenport and I'll call you back if he says it's okay.
Do that, Virgil said.
Strait called back 5 minutes later. He says you're okay. Where are you?
I left the Arl Snake Barn maybe 10 minutes ago, heading south, Virgil said.
Then we could meet up in New Ulm. You go straight on south until you hit the river, take a right, and come across the bridge, Strait said. There's a Taco Bell off on the right side of the road, a couple blocks in.
When?
I'll be waiting for you, Strait said.
Beans and corn, beans and corn, beans and corn, all the way down.
Strait was leaning against the back of his Chevy pickup, a soft drink cup in his hand, when Virgil pulled into the Taco Bell parking lot. Strait was a short, husky man in a canvas outdoor shirt, worn loose, and jeans and boots. He was wearing a camouflage PSE hat and mirrored sunglasses. Virgil climbed out of his Forerunner and noticed the lump under Strait's elbow and said,
"You're carrying."
Strait lifted his shirt to show Virgil the butt of a full-size Beretta and said,
"Wouldn't you? If you were me? I still can't walk right and maybe never will. I do got a carry permit."
"Where'd she hit you?"
"Back of both legs. Didn't lead me enough."
"Looks like she got the elevation wrong, too," Virgil observed.
"Well, it was a snapshot, and I was running. I gotta give her that much," Strait said. "She ain't a bad shot. I saw her get out of her truck, and I knew what was coming. This was back at my place in Owatonna, and I started running to get behind my truck. I was carrying then, too, and when I went down, I got behind the tire and emptied a whole goddamn magazine at her. I measured it off later at 312 yards. I gave her about 6 feet of elevation shooting my Beretta, which turned out to be right. That was the clincher when they arrested her. Bullet holes and bullet dings on her truck. They got a slug with rifle markings that matched my gun."
"Lucky that she didn't have time to get set up," Virgil said.
"You're telling me," Strait said. He hitched up his pants.
"What can I do for you?"
"I'm looking for those stolen tigers."
"I don't have them. I got enough to do with my bears and my snakes," Strait said.
"To tell you the absolute truth, you'd have to be crazy to snatch those tigers. I mean, Jesus Christ, didn't those people know what was going to happen? That they were going to have a world of shit raining down on their heads? All of our heads? I knew goddamn well that when somebody stole those tigers, somebody would be coming around to give me a hard time. It just ain't fair to legitimate businessmen to get painted with this broad brush."
"I don't know what they were thinking," Virgil said. "That's something I'd like to know."
"They wouldn't have done it if they knew about my situation. That goofy twat Maxine hunting me down like I was a rabid dog."
"You're an expert in this stuff," Virgil said. "If they're processing these tigers for medicine, how long would it take?" Strait took his hat off, brushed his hair back with one hand, and looked up at the sky. After a while, he said,
"They were full grown, right?
I'd say a couple, 3 days apiece, if they got access to a good commercial dryer. That's if they're processing the whole animal.
With tigers over in Asia, sometimes the poachers will only take the eyes, heart, whiskers, teeth, penis and balls, and femur bones.
You could do that in an hour, maybe, put everything in a sack. When you do that, you leave a lot of money on the ground."
"What are the femurs for?"
"Well, all ground up, they're supposed to cure about anything," Strait said. "Everything from ulcers to burns. Then there's the baculum. That's a bone in the penis. You could get anything up to $5,000 for an Amur tiger baculum alone."
"Really?"
"That's the fact, Jack. Who would you look at for this?"
Strait stuck a pinky finger in his ear, wiggled it around, then said, "Well, Amur tiger is going to be worth some serious money, but you'd have to be able to prove it was real. That's probably why they don't care about the publicity. Maybe even want some of it, to prove it's real Amur they're talking.